I was just gonna interview him and say, hey, what, tell me your people. How about this? It'll be on the fly. Let's go.
That's what we just did.
This will be fun.
Hello, I'm Danielle Petty. I'm at the Dragonfly booth. I'm here at NATA in Houston. This is Jared.
Hey, I'm Jared Plummer. I'm with Donjo Orthopedics and ACO Med Supply, based out of Greenville, North Carolina. So based out of Charlotte, North Carolina, and I'm an Eastern North Carolina rep. And then to my right is Jim Basilucci.
And I'm Jim Basilucci. I'm with Carolina's healthcare system in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Cool. Good deal. So I wanted to invite Baz on just briefly to kind of discuss a little bit about his background, and we can talk a little bit about how we met and how people that have affected you in the athletic training profession. And Danielle is here because we're going to do the same thing to her. So this is a live fire exercise. But how about Baz? If you can, give me a little bit of your background, your story, how you got into athletic training and all.
Well, my story is probably not different than most other guys that got into athletic training, in the sense that as a young kid, my dad was a coach. And so that brought me around athletics all the time. And as a kid, you don't have any skills other than go get things, pick it up, hold this, kind of stuff. So you start off in that sense, and then you realize where you can be helpful, in an athletic environment without much skill. And as you grow and mature, you become more and more involved and get more and more tasks on you, which kind of, for me, added that part of, I want to play sports because that's what you're supposed to do in high school. But I also saw a need at my school because we didn't have an athletic trainer. We didn't have anyone in those kind of roles, let alone that I know what one was, I guess, at that time. And so that got me into it. But my school also recognized we didn't have somebody. And that was back in the 80s when it was just being recognized that your school might need to have somebody if you're going to have a football program.
Right.
And so my high school said, hey, you start going to summer camp, we'll pay for it, we'll get you there if you come back and use your skills at our school as a student.
Yeah.
And so that's where I started it, went to a summer camp in Greensboro, North Carolina, which was, hundreds, 300 plus students at this, high school students at this
one
camp.
Were you a student at that?
Yes, I was a student. Yeah, I was a student at that camp from 82 through 86.
So who oversaw that?
They're still around. I actually just ran into one of them this summer. So at that time, it was Al Proctor and Robbie Lester. And Robbie Lester was with our State Department of Public Instruction.
State of North Carolina.
State of North Carolina, yep. I guess everybody doesn't come from the same states. And they were kind of mentors at one point, in the sense of they're the ones that kind of had that enthusiasm for teaching athletic training and getting students involved in that sense. And then through my years there, I had several other instructors, that kind of piqued my interest. My first one was Dan Henley, who was at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro at the time. He's at a clinic now. My second year was Phil Calicut, who was with Wake Forest at the time, but has since gone to the FBI Academy. It was one of their first athletic trainers working in law enforcement down in Georgia. And then my third year, I had actually Rod Compton, who was the head of the program at East Carolina University. And every year I would always ask, if this is what I want to do, where should I go to school? What program should I learn from? And the educational system was way different back then. So there were three curriculums in our state, in North Carolina at the time. And every single person, no matter where they went to school or where they worked, all said East Carolina was the place to go at that time. And so that was the only place I applied to go to school. When that time came around, I said, okay, East Carolina is where it is. Everybody says that's where to go. I can follow directions pretty well.
I was absolutely the same. And obviously, I met you through those high school athletic training students, or whatever you call it, the little student athletic trainer camps. And, once again, actually, you and Sue Grainer Radicke at East Carolina were the ones, and this is kind of embarrassing to say, you guys are the ones that talked me in or convinced me to do this thing. And, and Randy Pridgen and John Burney and, some of those, the old timers, as it were. Maybe you're not one of the old timers, but, those guys, and it was fascinating to learn early on as a high school kid, kind of how, some of the college guys do it. Cause at the time you were East Carolina, you were working with men's basketball,
yep.
Correct? So you graduated from East Carolina, and then where'd you go from there?
I didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, that's right.
At the time, we had had a personnel change at the school. So when I was an undergraduate, there were 3 full-time staff members. That was it. No grad students, none of those kind of things. Undergraduate students provided a lot of coverage and workforce and traveled with teams in that sense. And going into my senior year, which was a year and a half long because we had a semester of student teaching back then because, you know, we got dual credentialed as teachers and athletic trainers. And then as I was getting ready to graduate, we had a personnel shift, so they were down to 2 people. And so I asked, you know, can I stay on as a grad student? And they're like, we haven't had one of those in forever. I'm like, going, so? And they're like, sure. And it surprised me that it was that easy for them to say it, but they were shorthanded a little bit to do it.
They must have been desperate for you.
They were desperate to go to the bottom of the barrel and have me do it. So I stayed on as a grad student, but I changed departments because one of the philosophies was don't stay with the same people. You don't learn different things. Yep. And so one of the things I did was I changed departments so that I had a new set of instructors, new set of knowledge base, a new way of thinking about things. But I worked in athletics and taught in health education. So that's where the teaching part got honed a little bit in that sense. And then once I finished grad school, they still had the shortage of people. And so they kind of said, well, you're already here. Let's go ahead and hire you. I was actually at a national convention out in Kansas City when I got the phone call offering me the full-time position. And that's when Sue and I got hired at the same time.
Okay, I didn't realize. So you jumped right into the men's basketball position then, correct? You covered 7
initially,
sports,
yeah.
Right?
So we had whatever 13 sports at the university. And when I got hired, you know, with a staff of 3, there was 1 female assistant, 1 male assistant, and then the head person. The head person at the time did football and basketball. So I did every other male sport other than basketball to start with.
Yeah.
And then after 2-3 years, we switched out, and Mike Hanley, who's their director now on the athletic side, kind of said, you know, let's kind of separate that. That's a lot of traveling for any one person to do. And so he switched to where he became the head football person and then gave me the option of saying, you can pick this sport or that sport. And I said, well, football versus basketball, outside, heat, humidity, 100 people, never ends. Basketball, 15 people, indoors, climate control.
71 degrees every day.
Right. I said, I think I'll take a little basketball right now and stuff like that. But, I mean, every sport had its thing. And so I would help a little bit with soccer in the fall until basketball kicked in. Then I'd do basketball. And then when basketball kicked in, it would be spring. It would be build baseball and stuff like that. But we started adding GAs at that time too. Yeah. And so we had a GA mostly in charge, and we oversaw the GA. So we didn't necessarily have to be there every day, you know, because – college athletics switched from being a seasonal thing to a year-round thing probably in the 90s, you know, kind of thing. And so, you know, now as I'm learning, they probably have about 13 full-time staff-ish with GAs and stuff like that. And, of course, that's going
to
be changing.
I was actually about to jump back over to Danielle. So where did you go to undergrad in grad school? And then how did you end up – so you're currently the soccer athletic trainer at East Carolina University. How did you wiggle your way over there?
So I started out in undergrad at Eastern Illinois University and had a great time there, learned a lot, and decided to go to grad school somewhere pretty far away. So I chose Texas State and worked football for 2 years there. That was a big eye-opener for sure. And then when I finished grad school, I got hired on actually back at Eastern Illinois University.
Okay.
And there I've worked pretty much the majority of the sports. We had a lot of staff movement, so I was able to kind of accept different roles and take on different tasks and everything. So had pretty much just about every sport except football and track there. And then, you know, after 4 years, I decided it was time to move on and, you know, go potentially just one sport as opposed to 3 to 4 that I was, you know, working. And so I applied to East Carolina University and I got the job. So I took it like that.
Yeah. And how tough was it handling the Texas heat?
Honestly, not bad. It was pretty dry.
Okay.
So,
not the humidity of the armpit of the United States, which is North Carolina sometimes,
right,
even Mississippi.
Right.
Understood. What would you say? Who would you say made the biggest impact in your career? Like who was the person who, whether it be networking or maybe that person who kind of was like, oh, you know what? Yeah, I learned a lot from that guy, even though you didn't realize it until 10 years later.
You know, there's a few people. The high school athletic trainer that I had. We had a few, like, the first, like, 2 years I was in high school. And then I met Amanda Nethery Bogger. She kind of took me under her wing and taught me a lot just as a high school student. You know, we didn't have those internship anything, but she allowed me to kind of help out. And just kind of, you know, observe her and everything.
And where was she?
Collinsville High School.
Okay. So how? So where was the connection there? How did you? Was that where you went to undergrad? I mean, high
that's
school.
That's where I went to high school at.
Undergrad.
Yeah. And then during undergrad, Aaron Hazelhorst, who's now at Creighton. Okay. You know, I had him probably twice. Mm-hmm. As a preceptor, you know, when I was an undergrad, and he was one of those, like, if you want to learn, you know, he's not going to make you do anything, but if you want to learn, like, you're going to learn.
Yeah.
And so he had a good level of, like, throwing you in the deep end and making you either yeah. sink or swim, or but also kind of helping you, you know, stay afloat and everything.
Yeah. I interviewed Daryl Conway, who's now the associate AD at Michigan, and he made the comment. He said, because he was a guy that I considered one of my mentors, hired me out of southeastern Louisiana where I went to grad school, but he made the comment that, you know, Jared, I had to allow you to sink or swim, but he said, it's more so, you know, I gave you as much rope as you could hang yourself with, but I would make sure that I was always a stool underneath so you didn't hang yourself. So, yeah, so I think you know, I'm not going to get into a policy talk as far as, you know, education and all, and, you know, the all the, you know, your students coming out and not having as much, you know, I do believe they have such a much better clinical evidence-based knowledge at the same time, the practical side. But I'll tell you, there are times when, you know, when you go right into grad school, and I'd be interested to hear from you going from undergrad at East Carolina and graduate school at East Carolina. Where do you feel like your experience changed? Like, where did you feel like you were just a student, or were you made to feel like, hey, you're the guy and we need you the guy?
Yeah, I think for us back in the day, our staffs were so much smaller.
Sure.
You had to quickly step into the role. Yeah. There was no one
else
around.
Trial by fire. Yeah.
You were there. Even as a student, your experiences were so much more in-depth than they were that you were relied on for answers,
yep.
you know, in that sense. And so when you kind of transitioned into a real full-time position where you were the one they came to for the answers,
yeah.
you know, we still had a good tier of things and a lot of physician involvement and stuff like that. So we were constantly learning and doing mm-hmm. those kind of things. So it wasn't as dramatic as it is these days. I think the way the educational system has been set up lately, the students have, I think, less involvement hands-on in terms of have to make their own decisions.
Mm-hmm.
It's dependent on the setting a little bit and in the situation they're in, but compared to how we were thrown to the fire, is and there's pluses and minuses to both of
sure.
them. I'm not saying one is necessarily
that, yeah.
better than the other, but it was way different, and I felt more prepared getting a real job because it felt like the same thing. It wasn't like I have not done this before.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think now, listening to the kids who, you know, I'm a preceptor, and the kids coming in, you know, they have all their knowledge base is much broader, probably more in depth than what ours was at the time, but they're just not comfortable using it yet.
Yeah,
and
sure.
so they had, you know, grad school or internships or whatever method of them actually transitioning from the knowledge to the skill,
sure.
you know, applying it all, I think is the challenge they're having. And I hope that some of that's going to be solved a little bit with, you know, the next transition to the grad level programs mm-hmm. and things like that, that, you know, maybe that won't be the issue of not being confident enough in their skills and knowledge sure. and applying it into a job when they come out of their program.
Sure. So I'm actually curious about this, and it's a little bit in education, but what are your thoughts on like the high school students, like doing those high school camps? I personally thought I got so much from it. But, you know, there's also the question as to whether, you know, should they be, should they not be? How do you feel like that helped prepare you for high school, for college, like working those high school camps early on?
Well, I think
was it more just getting you interested?
Right. Back in our day, there was a combination of skill learning, you know, whether it's taping and those kind of things and basic first aid kind of stuff. We didn't learn
a lot
crazy things and stuff like that. But I think it piqued our interest enough to want to, that's what we wanted to do,
yeah.
to pursue that in college.
Mm-hmm.
When there's going to be a gap now between the high school student, 4 years, they have to get a degree, and then
and
they have to come
school.
Into grad school, I'm not sure how those camp things are going to survive
yeah.
quite as well, because it's not going to be an immediate turn
yeah.
to it. So they're going to have to change how they do or what their goal is and what they're doing. You can still pique an interest, and you're still going to have to pick an undergraduate degree, and hopefully that'll be in maybe exercise physiology or biomechanics or, you know, something semi-related. But, you know, we picked our grad programs to kind of complement our undergraduate. Now they're going to have to pick an undergraduate that's going to complement what their grad's going to be. So it's going to kind of be a little reversal.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what the students actually, you know, choose to study. But I think the high school student summer camp kind of thing was a great, like, advertisement and a peak of interest. And then you went into the real programs, mm-hmm. you know, and did it. And I'm just curious how that's going to transition with that gap in education.
Yeah, sure. What got you... So Baz and I were literally probably the same. It was the North Carolina Student Trainer Symposium, yep. or whatever. So we had the exact same reasons we got in athletic training. What perked your interest?
So initially I was PT bound.
One of those.
One of those. And, you know, I always had athletic training in the back of my mind. But, you know, it was one of those things I figured I'll decide, like, once I get into college and everything. And so I went to a junior college first. Played soccer there and got into a really bad car accident. And going through, you know, the patient side of PT for the number of months I had to go through it, I told myself, you know, pretty much every day I was like, there's no way I can do this, you know, as a living. There's no way. Even though you're on the other side, there's no way I can do this. And so, you know, right then was how I picked Eastern Illinois. They had an accredited program. I knew people that were going there. And ever since I started taking the classes, I've loved it. Not that I'm dumb or anything, but I excelled in those classes because I was interested
yeah.
in the topic. And so to have all of my classes athletic training based, you know, I had a 4.0 yeah.
well,
in those classes.
We don't need to talk about GPAs because
the diploma is enough to prove it.
I've never once been asked what my GPA was after undergrad or grad school. But anyway, that being said, but good for your 4.0. I'm not I could do a really good Lockman, but I can't tell you. Whether it's A, B, C, or D on this, but would you say in your experience, I'm interested in like a personal experience kind of thing. What would you say maybe one of your, and you're on deck too. So maybe some memorable moments for you, whether it be professionally. Look, I mean, so Baz may not say it, but he's got quite a bit of awards trophy case at the house, I'm sure. And I know that you were at least once North Carolina University Athletic Trainer of the Year, if not. Couple times, okay, so three times. I knew it was once, and then you've won some service awards for NATA, which is what today. What's the award today? You're getting an award.
Yeah, today's going to be one of the NATA service awards
yeah.
in that kind of sense, and so that's yeah. One of the criteria for that is just to be old, because you have to be have been doing the job for at least 20 years,
right.
you know, in that sense. But yeah, it's always humbling to be. Recognized by anybody, let
alone especially your peers.
Especially your peers, you know. I always take it. I'm just happy when the kids say thank you.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
the place you're at. You know that's plenty enough reward sometimes.
Sure.
But yeah, the first award I got was while I was at East Carolina, the College University Athletic Trainer of the Year for our state of North Carolina. After I left East Carolina, I was at a high school and then won the secondary school athletic trainer
that's
of the
right,
year.
Yeah.
And then this past spring, I also teach at UNC Charlotte.
Yep.
In addition to my clinic outreach in the high school. So, you know, multiple jobs still, because I really enjoy teaching, you
yeah,
know,
sure.
kind of stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I won the Educator of the Year yeah. in North Carolina. Back in 2014, I was inducted, the word for that one, inducted into the North Carolina Athletic Trainers Hall of Fame
yeah.
As the youngest ever person at 40-something.
For what it's worth, you still act like you're 18
to
22.
The mentality will never change.
That's
the,
right.
the body may be giving up a little bit here and there, but the viewpoint doesn't change
yeah,
much
sure.
in that sense. And so, yeah, but I also look at it saying with those kinds of awards and accolades or whatever have you come a lot of responsibility.
Sure.
You know, people look at you differently and expect different things from you. You know, because one of the things that was pushed as an undergraduate is you give back to the profession, you provide service, you do those kind of things. And so in addition to just those individuals there, we were always presenting at our district, you
sure.
know, MAATA meetings.
Yeah.
That was just something we did. Mm-hmm. And because of that, you saw and developed new respect for those leaders.
Yep.
And I still see, I love coming to these meetings. You know, I can't come every year, but I love seeing the people that were influencers at the time and things like that, because they still say hey to you and
sure.
they're still like, even though they were never my teachers or professors or things like that, they're now my colleagues. And I have such respect for, you know, the Scott Johnsons
mm-hmm.
and Marty Bradley, some Old Dominion kind of thing.
Yep.
I mean, they're all over the place,
yeah.
you know, then, and as you're, network branches out and goes other places, you just learn that much more. Yeah. You know, that is just incredible.
And really, once your network branches out, then exponentially it just runs.
Your kids, you're proud of what your students have done and what they've gone out and done.
I'm 36 and I've got students. I mean, that has been awesome. Just seeing like big hugs and it's weird now. Me, you know, I saw you just recently and I think of you as a mentor, and you're certainly the guy that arguably the guy that I loved your energy. And unfortunately, I'd like to say that we have pretty similar personalities, which is scary for me to say too. Yeah. But that being said, no, it's really cool to see the people that you've been able to make an impact on, even though there are people here that I'm here that I'm excited to see that made an impact on me. But what would you say is, Danielle, like your most fun or most memorable accomplishment as an athletic trainer, whether it be awards or maybe that story with that kid that overcame adversity or something? All right, thanks. There's none.
Great answer.
That's right.
No, I just that every day they call you. You know, they come up to you, you know, asking you questions, and they don't just, you know, one of the biggest fights right now is the Google. Mm. Every athlete wants
like
to Google.
WebMD kind of
thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wikipedia, WebMD, mm-hmm. just general. And, you know, when athletes ask you first instead of just Googling, oh, well, the internet's, well, I don't really care what the internet says, you know. All of my schooling says this.
What the internet's eval say.
Right. And so, you know, for me, that right there, because I try to educate the athletes, the student athletic trainers, everything. So just that right there is huge for me and kind of keeps me going, because it's like, you know, they at least like trust me enough to ask me and not just Google it, not, you know, call their old athletic trainer or, you know, call student athletic trainers or whoever that they kind of trust and all of that. So for me, that's kind of the biggest,
yeah,
biggest
I gotcha. Thing. So if you guys can both think of maybe a funny story that's occurred as an athletic trainer, and I'll hit one of mine, and you can think a little bit. I was at Florida Atlantic University working with the head football coach was Howard Schnellenberger. Howard Schnellenberger has been, he's in the College Football Hall of Fame. He was the offensive coordinator for Bear Bryant. Offensive coordinator for Don Shula with the 72 Dolphins. So he's kind of the godfather, I guess. He was a pallbearer for Paul Bryant, Bear Bryant's funeral, for God's sakes. But I guess he played football with Moses back at Kentucky back in the day. But Coach Schnellenberger does not know how to do anything with technology. So we were down in Boca Raton at football practice, and we see on our little weather app that we had some weather coming in, and we had a tropical storm. So, you know, you have to practice through squall lines coming through. And on cue, we're like, hey, you know, we got lightning within, you know, 10 miles. So we start, you know, kind of getting our kids, our students to kind of get some stuff ready and talk to our video guys. And lightning's coming in, and boom, lightning's six miles away. And, hey, all right, coach, we got to get off.
Jerry, we're fine.
I'm like, coach, no, it was imminent. This is a tropical storm on its way. We are about to get pounded. And now, mind you, the video guys are like, hey, Jared, you know. I'm like, yeah, your lightning rods come down, you know, out of the lifts. And and I'm like, hey, coach, seriously, we're like 3 minutes away. We need to get them off. Oh, we got it. We're fine. And then I go one more time. I'm like, coach, it is 3 miles away. This is bad. And he goes, Jerry, I have an arrangement with God. I was like, all right, coach, I know you have your Schnelly bubble around it's coming on cue. The Boca Raton Municipal Airport runway gets struck by lightning, which is right at 500 yards away from one of our football practices. So, and to the point where it was like hundreds of thousands of dollars of repairs and was out of commission for months. But anyway, so we're on the phone with the assistant AD. Hey, you got to get the guy psychiatrist in or something. I don't know. Somebody's got to help us get off the field. He finally calls everyone up, which may sound like, hey, good, we're finally about to get off the field. But, you know, you do your emergency action plan. I think if I've got three football fields and I've got 115 guys spread out over three. No, now I've got everybody in one area. So all it takes is one strike in the wrong place. And this was his announcement. It's been brought to my attention that we have lightning in the area. Put your helmets on, fellas. It's lightning outside. And send them back to the office. And on cue, that's when the lightning struck. And then the entire team just ran right back to the locker room. So that was my Schnelly story, one of many. But do you have any – every athletic trainer's got that A story or 10. What do we say? One that's PC.
I don't know if I have a what I would consider terribly funny stories. I'm not that. I mean, I have fun. Yeah. But I don't know if they're funny stories in that sense. You know, so
maybe memorable. I mean, anything, coaches' interactions, fun, crazy.
Well, I mean, they've done some dumb things, you know, in that sense. Because I can remember being in a hotel with a basketball team traveling, and we're eating one of those 10:30 at night meals and stuff like that. And it is nothing more than sandwiches, you mm-hmm. know, in that sense.
Sure.
But yet my head basketball coach with a butter knife somehow slices his hand opening trying to butter a roll. And so, you know, you're in the hotel in the middle of the night trying to stereo strip a hand that got sliced yep. open with a butter knife.
Right.
You know, kind of thing.
Absurd. So that's not exactly something you'd planned on.
Yeah, you know, it's like, okay, hang on. And you're, you want to laugh at him.
Yeah.
But you don't because he is.
It's frowned upon.
Got a little bit of power over you occasionally yeah. in how things go on.
Understood. What you got?
Probably a softball player getting smashed in the face, 4 fractures to around her eye. And she was worried about her test the next day. And I was like, I think you have a bye. I don't think they're going to make you take the test. No, I have this test. You got to help me study. And I was like, I really don't think you're going to have to take this test.
You get a
hall
pass on this one. I think you're good. I got
you. The closest, and I don't even think it's fun. I mean, it's humorous because the kid still brings it up this day. So I was East Carolina. I want to say we were going up to American University to play basketball. And I'm tall. I'm 6'7". And at that time, our basketball team, the tallest person in the program was 6'8". Like, the literally written program, mm-hmm. but I'm still taller than he is when we stand next to each other, you know, because they inflate everything in those things. And so, you know, we go to the practice, you know, we'll shoot around and stuff like that and go to the game. And one of our small walk-on basketball players is overhears the other team wondering which player I am because I'm dressed up and they just assume that with my height, I must be the hurt guy
because
I'm down at the end of the thing, taller than all the team and stuff like that, which is not saying a whole lot for a Division I basketball team when the athletic trainer is the tallest person on the team. But
probably no bueno. When I was at Ole Miss, we had a kid, Mike Warren, who is he was an athletic trainer. And Mike is – I don't know what a legal midget is, but he's really close to it. But, he walks off, and it's amazing seeing him talk to Andy Kennedy, who's still at Ole Miss, head basketball coach. He's got to be in the 6'5", 6'6", area, and he's 5'3". And we made a comment one time that we just need to – he's got to keep a step stool around that he travels with, but I couldn't imagine. What would you say would be – and we'll wrap up with this. If you were to give advice – and you're a young athletic trainer. When did you graduate? How long have you been out of grad school?
5 years.
Okay, so what would you say is that nugget, that Danielle nugget that you would give to a young professional coming out? To get maybe some encouragement or maybe words of wisdom for them.
I always tell my students, you have to take care of yourself first. You know, if that's taking a day off here or there or something, you have to take care of yourself because, you know, we kind of talked a little bit about burnout a little bit ago, and it's a real thing and it will happen and it'll hit you at random times. So you got to take care of yourself, take time off, go visit friends, family, mm-hmm. go on a vacation, something. Just mm-hmm. take care of yourself.
Yeah, cool. What about yourself?
If I had to give up, having been many, many years ago, never give up an opportunity to learn something. Yeah. I mean, we have a tendency to kind of look at older individuals and think, they're past their prime. They don't know what they're doing anymore. They're old school. They don't have the new thing. So if you stay fresh, you know, with things, but do you realize that a lot of the elder statesmen walking around in here and stuff like that are a wealth of knowledge? Don't pass up that opportunity to learn from them because things have been going on for a long time and, you know, things always seem to cycle back around. So if you take the time to learn at every opportunity, whether it's an educational setting or just talking to somebody, you know, you're going to be farther advanced than someone who just stays in the books and does those things.
For sure. No, and I guess mine would be always have a Rolodex ready so that when you have that episode pop up that it wasn't in Arnheim, I read the book front to back. It's not here, you know. There's so many things that you cannot be taught, and you're only taught on the fly. But if you rely on your network, which hopefully you've developed, and that's the other word of advice, develop a network and keep up with them, whether it be Facebook or whatever you want. Have that. Don't be afraid to ask because we've all been in that situation. I've been out for 13 years. You've been out 5. You've been out for a little longer than that. But I mean, I absolutely have people that I call when I need something, I think it's important to not, you don't have to be the hero. It's okay that you can rely on other people. I guess that's it. I'd like to thank everybody for joining and have a great conference. How do you end that? I don't know. And that's
to pass.
Hey, can you write in your
stuff?
Yeah, you don't have to write topic or stuff.